Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 7:19 Central African time. Consciously connected, keeping your company this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning, the time of the morning where we join by our very own Adam Kamda, who's got the Indian Ocean all in the... No, not in a fish tank. He can't have it in his swimming pool. He's just got it in his vision. He's looking at it and he's enjoying it. He's embracing it. He's celebrating it. And Adam Kamda, welcome to your segment on Marcus Sahaba, Fishing with Adam Kamda. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And how are you doing this beautiful morning, Adam?
Wa alaikum salam, Safad. Yes, I got up before 5 a.m. this morning, and I've had a full morning already, a full day, you can say. Cycled to Blue Lagoon, met some customers at the beachfront there, trying for Garrick, cycled back, met Brian on the beachfront who posed for some photos with his wave ski, took photos of the ocean, some beautiful bird pics. There's a big road race and cycle race from Suncoast. Took some photos of all the runners and the cyclists there as well. So it's been a pretty eventful morning. Very chilly this morning, but Durban is really alive with activities on the beachfront, Shabbat.
No, absolutely, and the early bird catches the worm. But what about the early fisherman? You know, he's catching the big fish when he gets the early. What's the earliest you go for fishing to make sure that, you know what, I'm there at the right time, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, our morning routine for fishing usually revolves around the sunrise time. So in winter, we've been a bit lazy and getting to the boat at around 6 a.m. But as the sun rises earlier in the months ahead, I was just checking this morning, and we could easily launch at 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. We usually wait for a bit of brightness in the sky, because when you're heading out to sea, there's lots of there can be a lot of debris in the water, and it can be a danger to the motors, Shafat. So we don't usually go out, you know, in pitch darkness. Having said that, if you want to target salmon off Durban, then you have to confront the peril of the debris and head out in the dark hours, because you want to be right there on the spot with your live baits just before the sun comes up, Shafat.
Well, you know, you talk about a fisherman, and, you know, I was walking just the other day, and it was windy. I'm checking these guys still standing there with the rods. And, you know, generally it has been a little windy this week. But you still find that the fishermen will go and try and fish. And some may say, hey, it's just all right in the head, man. Check the wind is here and he's still fishing. Talk to us about that scenario, Adam.
Yes, Shafaz, you do get the diehard fishermen that come rain or shine, they will be out there fishing. But also consider, you know, when the weather is perfect, you've got hundreds of fishermen on the beachfront all competing for a good spot. But when the when it's looking threatening with rain or it's a bit windy, you basically have the entire spot to yourself, Shafat. So those anglers that can withstand the elements end up enjoying those pristine spots all by themselves, Shafat.
So then you find the other guy will say, hey, but you know, chef, things are bad here. The weather's up. I'm going to find the gap. And suddenly you find the wind subsiding and, you know, the sun comes out. That's his gap. During that gap time, is he gapping or is he gaffing any big fish?
Yes, Shafat, this morning is a typical example of that. The weather forecast was showing 4.7 meter swells, 27 knot southerly winds, and really not conducive to fishing. And that's why I didn't go out on the boat this morning, and I'm available to be on air with you, Shafat. So I think the elements are colluding with you to keep me landbound, to keep me on air. But alhamdulillah, I'm happy to be here. Having said that, when I rode to Blue Lagoon, I could see the conditions are looking lovely. It was very fishable from the boat. Even the guys at Blue Lagoon, even though the swell is running a bit, not quite 4.7 meters that or what the forecast predicted, but I'd say 2 to 3 meter swells pushing there. And the guys had netted some mullet in the river, and they were busy trying for garrick this morning. So had they followed the weather forecast, they would have been sitting at home or maybe gone shopping with their spouses on a Sunday. But they took their chance. And I think the pattern this week was strong winds. But after every bout of strong winds, the conditions settled very quickly. So although the forecast was for around 27 knots at about 3 a.m., by 5 a.m. or 7 a.m., it had settled down to only about 5 knots, Shafat. So very fishable day. And those guys that do go out on the, in the doubtful days sometimes find a gap like this morning where it turns out to be a really marvelous morning to fish, Shafat.
Babu Ba says, Assalamu alaikum. I'm really enjoying Adam Kamda there. Please tell Adam Ba to tell us about the bronze bream. A lot of people talk about the bronze bream. And tell Adam Ba to tell the people to use big bait for bronze bream. Hey, looks like Babu Ba knows something about fishing here, Adam.
Yes, Shafar, when you talk of bronze bream, you remind me of my good friend and customer, Keolin Mudli. He was an expert in bronze bream fishing on the south coast. He's now moved to New Zealand, so he's busy experimenting with all the different traces and baits and trying to learn all those species down in that part of the world. But whenever it was bronze bream season, Keolin, you know, would head down to his secret spot and use a proper bronze bream trace. And he was very fussy with using a red prawn, Shafat, not even white prawn or pink prawn. It had to be red prawn. And he was a very successful angler, always posting pictures of big bronze bream. And bronze bream is pretty much very prized as a table fish, Shafat. I believe when you cook it, you know, it tastes very much like crayfish meat.
Ah, brilliant indeed. And what about that fisherman, you know, some say they go to the beach or the wife will say, yeah, my husband does fishing, but he's only going to feed the fish. You find that it comes back empty all the time. Shouldn't we give him an advice or tell him, hey, brother, use bigger bait, man. Maybe you can catch them one time. I don't know. Explain that phenomena to me, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, if you look at the statistics, I think the amount of bait that the fisherman throws into the water to the amount of fish they actually catch, I think it's 10 to 1. So for every 10 kilos of fish that is used for fishing, you only get 1 kilo of fish out. And this seems a little bit odd, but it's general and includes all fishermen. So there are a lot of fishermen that will be out there enjoying a day out fishing, but not really hooking up big fish and bringing a lot of fish home. But that's the fun of fishing, Shafar. It's an outdoor activity. You're getting your vitamin D from the sunshine. You're running up and down the beach. So you're getting a lot of physical exercise. And it's a lovely family outing as well. Get the kids involved, splashing in the waves, and get them little kiddies combos to have a throw for carentine and blacktails, etc. And talking about using bigger baits, Shafar, you know, you got to match the tackle, the trace, and the bait for the species that you are expecting. So when you're starting off fishing, you would start to fish near the rocks, between where the rocks end and the sand starts. And you target carentine and blacktails, which are smaller fish. So they need tiny hooks and small specks of bait. But the bite is much faster. So you don't end up trying to introduce a child fishing and he gets bored standing on the beach the whole day not getting a bite. It's active fishing. It's exciting fishing. And from there, they usually move up to shad fishing, which also are shoaling fish. And the bite is really fast, so it keeps kids excited for hours at a time. And when the shad are bigger sizes, you know, it's lovely to put some fresh fish on the table as well, Shafat.
Now, Adam, you know the saying, he who hesitates is lost. Now, when you go to the shoreline, then you got your boat there. I mean, you are going from from the yacht mole and so forth. But what happens when, you know, there's this hesitation? When there's a hesitation, is it better for you to hesitate and keep away or to launch? What would you do if you like you have a intermittent feeling? You know, you have like, should I? Should I not? How do you work that scenario out, Adam?
Shafat, fishing from the shore is pretty forgiving. You know, you can fish from rocks, you can fish from the sandy beaches, even when it's very windy and big swells. You know, you can still put in a good few hours of fishing and catch some decent fish. Having said that, when fishing from rocks, make sure you use good footwear so you don't lose your balance. Never turn your back to the sea. You know, you could get a big wave coming and washing you off the rocks. But where it really comes into its own in terms of following your gut instinct is when it comes to surf launching. So when you surf launch, you're basically dropping your boat onto the sand on the water's edge. You turn the boat around. You push it in you know, it's still the boat's floating. And then you wait for the break. You go out into the sheltered area and you try and time the waves to get out to sea smoothly. But sometimes, you know, you can sense that there's something not right with the ocean, and the swells are coming through not in regular sets. You know, you're getting that odd freak wave coming through. And, you know, when you can see that those conditions are beyond your capability and you have a bit of doubt in you, Shafat, it's better to call it a day and decide to come back and fish another day. It's always safety first. And you don't want to end up trying to launch through big swells and having an incident where you flip your boat or you lose tackle overboard, etc. You'd rather place a higher value on your life and the life of your crew and the value of your equipment. So there's no shame in saying, you know what, the conditions are beyond my capabilities, guys. Let's pack it up today. We'll come back another day.
Well said there. And then this, you know, some people will walk and fish, and you know, maybe low tide. Some dangers of fishing during a low tide, you know, sometimes you're walking in and then there's a big dip. And I don't know how many fishermen can swim, but if you can't swim, you get a shock of your life in the panic, you know, a lot of things can happen. But talk to us about that you know, scenario where you're walking and you be careful. You need to respect the shorelines. And I don't know, beyond the breakers, what can happen, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, what you're referring to is called wading, where you walk towards the water, you walk towards the waves, you walk into the sea. And very often, you know, from the beach, you can observe the way the waves are breaking, and you can see that there's a sandbank, you know, like maybe 10 or 20 meters from the shoreline. So you would walk in, you would wade in, and the idea here is to get as close as possible to the back line. But often, as you mentioned, you get a dip, then it comes up to a sandbank. So very often you wade in to like navel deep water or chest deep water, and then you continue walking towards deeper water, but it actually gets shallower as you climb up onto the sandbank. And then you can even come up to about knee deep, Shepard, on the sandbank. And from there, you get closer to the waves and you cast your bait over the back line, and then you basically walk back to the shore. Where you go through the dip, you have to wade again, and then you come back out. So the unknown here is how deep is that gully before you reach that sandbank. And it's very important to know how to swim properly. It's also a great idea to be fishing with friends, two or three friends. So if you do get into trouble, either they can come out and assist you, or they can call for help. But never do it beyond your capability. It's always preferable to learn under guidance. If you are interested in wading, I recommend joining a proficient fishing club and go out with more experienced guys. They'll teach you the ropes. They'll explain to you what to avoid, what to look for, and so you can do it safely. And as I said, start in calmer conditions on a known beach where the terrain is well known. Get used to it, and then you know you can progress into other beaches and maybe even a bit of rougher conditions as well, Shafat.
Well, living in Spingo Beach, we get a lot of monkeys, but I got one in my yard here, Adam, which is known, I call it the rogue monkey. He's always, you know, scavenging. He sees, oh, yeah, this guy got some nice butter bananas, but he'll come and steal a bunch or something like that. But what about the rogue wave that, you know, as you said, you're wading through and you said, no, I can go deeper. And then a rogue wave gets you. Talk to us about the rogue wave. Or, you know, am I over-exaggerating my term, rogue?
Yes, Shafar, there is a term called a rogue wave. So especially for surf launching again, you know, you'd stay on the shore and you'd observe the waves and you'd count the sets and you'd basically have a rough idea, okay, it takes 2 minutes for the big set to come through and then there's a lull, and that's the lull that you anticipate where you would launch a boat and head out to sea and try and get through to the back line through the fairly flat water. But often, you know, when you think the biggest wave has come through, the set, you'd get one rogue wave coming through where you are actually expecting the lull, but you get the biggest wave of the set actually coming through from the back. And that's, you have to be very cautious of that. And it can affect many different types of anglers, whether you're self-launching or even, as you mentioned, wading out to sea. You can get a rogue wave coming, breaking completely over you, and then even the backwash causing a rip current to take you out to sea.
Then, you know, we get to the terminology. Hey, chicken fillets. I don't know where you buy your chicken from, but it's a chicken fillets going at a special, and most of our people only go for fillets. But then I believe that when it comes to using baits, you use fillets too. Talk to me about that fillets that you use for bait, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, when we fish deep sea, we use mostly marine organisms that, you know, that not like land proteins like chicken, etc. We use mussels, we use sardines mostly, squids, we call choka. We use those type of baits. But I do know a lot of anglers fishing freshwater for example, tiger fish love to use strips of chicken fillets. They even use chicken livers. I've heard of people using ox heart. So you can get really exotic, you know, in the types of bait that you use, as long as it appeals to that fish that you are targeting. I suppose anything goes, Jafar.
Ibrahim says, Assalamu alaikum. I'm really enjoying the program. I don't miss it for anything. Adam is one of the best. I agree with you. He said, Adam, I know the term reef is where all these other fish build their own colonies and live there, sometimes like the clownfish. But then I think of reefs being very close to the shorelines. When people talk about deeper reefs, what do they mean? That's a good question, Adam.
Yes, Shafat, in the tropical, thinking of latitudes, I couldn't get the word latitude. In the tropical latitudes, like, for example, from Mozambique northward, closer to the equator, you find lots of coral reefs that grow around islands and shorelines, which protects the shore from huge breakers. Here in Natal, we don't have coral reefs, but we do have a rocky reef. So in these rocky reefs, it provides shelter for little fish. It's often spawning grounds. You get a lot of young growing around there, especially fish like rockhard, etc. They live under the cover of these rocky reefs. And as they grow, you'd find they move out to deeper reefs. So fishermen would typically find rocky reefs from as shallow as 3 meters, 3 to 6 meters, you know, depth behind the back line. Here you'd find lots of crayfish and lobsters, etc. Further out, you'd get reefs around, say, 18 to 20 meters. Here you'd find lots of bottom fish living in those reefs, as well as big kuta, etc., cruising around those reefs. And anglers often target kuta around those reefs around the 19 to 20 meter mark. Then beyond that, you know, it just depends where you explore and what you find. We've got good fishing marks where the reefs are around 30 meters, beyond that 50 meters, 80 meters. And the deepest we fish usually is around 120 meters deep, Shafat. So on your fish finder, you'll be cruising around and you can see the depth. And then when you see a bump at the bottom, you know, then you can anticipate that that's a reef that that's holding fish. And then the sonar would show you some, you know, fish above that that bump. And that's where you'd actually target fish. So reef systems are very important for our style of fishing if we are targeting the resident fish. But the pelagic fish like tuna and barracuda, etc., normally are free swimming, and you'd encounter them at all parts of the ocean, whether it's reefy or sandy, Shabbat.
Yunus says, Bruce Schaff, really enjoying the program. Please tell Adam not to tease me with the tuna, because I only eat tuna out of the tin. I never chow the tuna that Adam catches. When he catches, please let us know. I'll come and buy it. Yunus, he's putting a tender here, Adam.
Yes, I'm a recreational fisherman, Shafat, so I'm not allowed to sell my fish or even barter, you know, for other things. But if I catch extra, I'll happily give him some tuna. I must say that the fresh tuna that we catch tastes completely different to the tuna that you get in the can. The tuna in the can is already processed. Virtually, it's cooked. You know, you can take it out of the can and eat it as it is without preparing it. The fresh tuna has got a completely different taste. It can also be eaten uncooked, you know, as sushi and various dishes, you know, with raw fish. You can make it into a ceviche, which is a generous squeeze of lemon over the diced raw fish, and the lemon actually chemically cooks the fish. So you leave it for about half an hour in the lemon juice, and the flesh turns white. So it's actually not cooked in the traditional sense with heat, but the lemon actually converts it. You know, to it has like a cooked taste, but it's absolutely delicious. And then you can also pan sear the tuna fish as well, which is the way I prefer it, Shafat.
Now, I hope those not calling you Mamu, eh? They say, hey, Adam, you're a Mamu. How many of them said, hey, you're a Mamu, Adam? Tell me.
Yes, Shafat, going out there, you do have, end up getting a reputation because we appear posting pictures on social media, you know, very often, and some people, you know, say, you know, he's a fishing expert, but I say that people are fishermen are learning all the time. No matter how much experience you have, no matter how many years you've been doing it for, there's always new techniques to learn from others. There's new products that are being launched, and there's, you know, a fisherman is always thinking of a new way, a new type of lure, a new color, you know, always trying to outwit and outsmart the fish that they're targeting.
Asif Ali says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam. I don't know if I'm imagining, but the records of yesteryear, they were very selective in what they chowed. But the records of nowadays are very greedy. They jump at most baits. How you respond to Asif there, Adam?
Shafar, I think they are still very selective. You know, the instinct is to preserve their life and not eat something that's risky, where they would suspect they're going to get caught. But they are also ambush feeders. You know, they'll sit in the dark cave and they'll watch for a fish to go by, and they'll dart out and grab that fish. So if you are drifting past that reef and you have a bait on your hook and it's drifting past, you know, the opening of that cave, that rockhound is going to come out and snap at it instinctively to eat that bait, and that's how you would catch it. Sometimes the impression is that they would just eat anything because, like in season, for example, right now, a lot of boats go out and they catch quite a few rockhound. It is season for bottom fishing, and the KZN anglers are really enjoying a bumper season, catching all manner of bottom fish, from rockhound to mussel cracker to steenbrass, and really having a good time off Durban, Shafat.
Saifullah says, Assalamu alaikum. Please make maaf, Adam, for my ignorance. I hear people talk about chokka baits. What is chokka baits, Adam?
Yes, it's basically squid, Shafat. So there's various species of squid. Like they are graded, you know, for our anglers. The smallest ones, they call baby squid or bay squid. Those are like about 8 centimeters long. You can use them whole on a hook, or you could cut them up and dress them up, you know, into different shapes of how you want to tie it. And then you get the bigger squids, which we call chokka. You get the porta squid, which is a thin-walled bait. It's much cheaper than the other chokkas. And you get the whitefish chokka, which is the loligo. And these, you know, typically they are packed in sizes around 20 centimeters up to about 40 centimeters. There are some, the better quality ones are individually packed, and they can go from 100 rand to like 150 rand each. So it just depends. If you're fishing in an area where the fish are prolific and they're not so fussy, like most of the charter guys would buy a 5 kilo of potter squid. But if you're a competition fisherman fishing from the shore and you want the absolute best chokka, you'd go for the pure white, bigger sizes that are individually wrapped, and spend a little bit of extra money to try and get a faster bite than your competitors, Shafat.
Tell you what, Adam, you taught me a lesson, yeah? I mean, I feel like a good thing, yeah, I know. I didn't know what a chokka is until you told me now. Hey, bless you for that. And Jazakallah said, I mean, that's why it's so important that the listeners ask us questions, Adam.
Yes, it's very interesting, Shafat. And sometimes sometimes we take things for granted, but a person would ask you a certain question, and then it makes you rethink, you know, the information that you have. Sometimes, you know, we also don't know all the answers, and it spurs you to go online and look it up and learn more. So the questions are a very important part of the segment, and really enjoy it, Shabbat.
No, me too. But me, I got the confidence because, you know, I know millions listen to us on our podcast and throughout the world. And, you know, you need to have a professori. And that confidence, like in you, I know, hey, if I'm going to ask this, the encyclopedia is there. Adam is there. Allah bless you for that. I know that your father is listening to you this morning. What are you going to tell Dad on it? Tell him something. Make him smile.
Yes, I'd like to wish him all the best for his upcoming trip. He's leaving for Umrah on the 2nd. So Allah take you safely, answer all your prayers, and bring you back safely to us. So I'd really like to wish him all the best. I don't know how you know all these things, Shafat. You've got one Farisa feeding you information as well.
You and I are one, you know, we can feel each other. We got a telepathy. The Indian Ocean connects us. But Alhamdulillah, Dad, if you're listening, our du'as are with you and every listener at Markaz Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, will make the du'a for you. And I know how Adam loves you. He simply loves you to bitter, Dad. So Alhamdulillah, inshallah, the du'as are with Dad. What's your recipe this morning, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, I've got a lovely chicken recipe. You were talking about chicken fillets. Chicken recipe with vegetables. So this is pretty much like a curry, but it's a slightly faster version, you know, using a blender to blitz certain things. So we'd start with 1 kg of boneless, skinless chicken thighs. Prefer the chicken thighs to the fillet for this. It's got more flavor. So you'd start the thighs with some salt on both sides, and preheat a large heavy bottom pot over high heat. Add the chicken to the pot and cook them for about 2 to 3 minutes on each side. Remove from the pot and place on a tray to rest. After it's cool, you can chop it up into 1-inch size cubes. Then you take a whole medium onion, cut it into chunks. You take some ginger, cut it into coins, and you take about 5 to 7 cloves of garlic. Add this all to a blender and blitz it. Then you add this to your pot, the pot that's, you know, that you use to cook the chicken in. It's got all the flavor at the bottom. Add a few tablespoons of olive oil. Add all that pureed onion, garlic, and ginger. Give that a good mix so that you incorporate all the brown bits of the chicken from the bottom of the pan. Then you add the following spices: chili powder, cumin, turmeric powder, garam masala, and some salt. Give that a cook for about 30 seconds until it becomes aromatic. Then you add your chicken into that. You add about a cup of water and some tomato puree. Bring that to a boil and cook that until the chicken is completely cooked through now. The first step where you sear the chicken is not completely cooked, but at this point you'll completely cook the chicken. Then you add in a large handful of baby spinach and a half a cup of frozen peas. Cook this through for just about 3 minutes and add some heavy cream and give it a good mix. And this can be served on savory rice or served with your favorite flatbread, Shabbat.
Adam, I'm going to chow that with the savory rice. Hey, it will make for easy digestion. Absolutely, mashallah, brilliant being in your company this morning. Your parting words, sir, before we let you go?
Yes, Shafat, I just love to encourage everyone to get up really early on the Sunday mornings and come and join us on the promenade for a cycle or a walk or a run, or even grab your surfboard or wave ski and come join us in the water. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafat. Salams to you and the listeners.
Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.